Hi, it's Jack Hopke. No, it's not Will Shorts. It's just me. But we do have appearances by all those elements on our weekly news magazine this evening, and we're glad to have you join us. The Southern Baptist Convention elected its first black president this past Tuesday, Fred Luter, a former street preacher who turned a dying New Orleans church into a powerhouse. Here and Now's Robin Young spoke with reporter Adele Banks for this profile piece.
That's why the playbook says in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 6, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. God wants us to produce on his team.
The Reverend Fred Luter, pastor of the Franklin Avenue Baptist Church in New Orleans' 9th Ward. Adele Banks is in New Orleans to cover the event for the Religion News Service. Adele, we know that Reverend Luter is 55, from a poor family in New Orleans, kind of a self-made man in many ways, started as a street preacher. Tell us more about him.
Well, for some Southern Baptists, he is considered the quintessential Southern Baptist. Even though he's African-American, many of them don't look at his race and instead look at his loyalty to the denomination, his great preaching. He has a very conservative stance on many social issues like other Southern Baptists. So they sort of see him as the whole package, both someone who represents them well and will help be more attractive to African-Americans in the future.
Well, so now he's going to be named president, and we know this comes as the Southern Baptist Convention has been losing members for the last 5 years and had sort of adopted a policy to place racial and ethnic minorities in more prominent church positions. He, of course, already had his very successful church. But his appointment comes as the church has had controversy. Richard Land, who was president of the church's policy arm, spoke out after the Trayvon Martin case. He accused President Obama of capitalizing on it. He called the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton race hustlers. He suggested that racial profiling was justified. He was somewhat demoted, but he's still in the church. You know, cynics might say, oh, this is window dressing.
I guess there's a big question about that. There are some who say, no, he's not, that this is a great step for the denomination. There are others that wonder whether there will be major consequences as the result of him being elected. And as far as Richard Land goes, it seems that Fred Luter is trying to be more of a bridge builder than bridge burner and saying, let's go ahead and love this man, even though he made these statements. Luter himself points to Land as being one of the people who was on the committee that drew up the racial reconciliation resolution of 1995, which was another major step for Southern Baptists to talk about being apologetic to their quote-unquote African-American brothers and sisters, saying that they should not have condoned individual and systemic racism.
You were there when he spoke to the convention a few years ago. I'm sure you've talked to church members now. What are they saying?
Well, especially some of the African-American Southern Baptists who know the history are really saying that they can't believe they've lived to see this day. One person I interviewed called it a 180-degree turn for the Southern Baptists. And then there are others who are a little hesitant, happy it's happening, but wonder whether things are really going to change that much, because at the moment there are still not African Americans leading any agencies, and as one person put it, you know, deciding on budget or personnel in the agencies of the denomination.
Well, and look, we know these are not the same Southern Baptists that fought segregation and embraced slavery. That was generations ago, but some are probably still alive, and we know the response in some quarters to a black man being president of this country. Have you spoken to Southern Baptists who are white and are nervous about this?
I haven't spoken to any that are nervous about it, that admit to that, but I can't imagine that there aren't some in the world of Southern Baptist life. It's always the case of Southern Baptists that you never know what happens until it happens. So everyone's talked about this as being very much expected, but we'll have to see how it plays out today.
Yeah, I suspect there will be some tears of joy. Adele Banks, covering the election of the Reverend Fred Luter as the first African-American president of the Southern Baptist Convention. She's with the Religion News Service. Adele, thank you.
You're welcome.
Robin Young is a Peabody Award-winning documentary filmmaker and the host of Here and Now, which you can hear weekdays at noon on WWNO2. And you can hear any of our features anytime at WWNO.org. It's all archived right there for you at our website. This is All Things New Orleans. I'm Jack Hopke. This summer, the Department of Theater, Arts, and Dance at Loyola University has enlisted a graduate of Moscow's premier ballet school, to help teach the next generation of dancers. Now, on this week's Notes from New Orleans with Sharon Litwin, we'll hear how the Muscovites' dancing principles coincide with the Jesuit ideals of education.
Irina Vasileni-Uralski absolutely looks the part. She's slim, ramrod straight, has her hair pulled back, and is really quite beautiful. So I know without even seeing her, you've figured it out. She's a ballerina.
I was born not in a family of artists. My parents had nothing to do with the arts. My father was an engineer and my mom was a housewife. But somehow I always knew I want to dance. And I was dancing at home, and then I asked my parents to take me to the professional school.
A graduate of one of the most famous dance schools in the world, the Bolshoi Ballet Academy, Irina has spent the past few weeks teaching their famous method to advanced students aged 13 and up in Loyola University's preparatory ballet program. She is a teacher in great demand with a unique perspective on what is happening to the world of classical dance, both in Russia and in this country.
In Bolshoi School, we had academic school, music school, and ballet school in one building. And this is a big difference, and in a way, to become a professional dancer is more difficult in the United States because you have to search for all of these disciplines somewhere else. And when I teach at Loyola University, I see that the faculty is really trying to incorporate Russian way of teaching as much as they can into the syllabus at the university. So and the students from music department, sometimes they take even ballet and vice versa. And it is going toward this complex education, which is much more productive and just gives more result.
Irina says learning the classic Russian method of teaching is just like learning a new language. Piece by piece, one new layer of knowledge placed on top of the one before, like a vocabulary heard, then written, then adapted into sentences. Once fluent in this dance language, the student is then completely equipped to innovate. So, with all the freedoms that came to Russia, has there been an explosion of creativity?
Unfortunately, it does not blossom, in my opinion. Soviet Union was not good. It was not a good life. But in a way, I was blessed to work with the Bolshoi during the Soviet times because it was no limits for creativity, money-wise. So the government just gave you all money you need for any production. What is negative is happening now, in my opinion, and it is very hard to judge. Everybody can travel. There is no iron curtain. They can explore modern and jazz. But in the same time, unfortunately, they are losing classics because they do not value them as much and they do not understand the importance of pure classical ballet. It is very sad, and dancers are not so purely trained as before. They are not as clean. And for me, sometimes it is very painful to see.
And what does Irina see happening in the United States? Can we identify potential talent and then can we support it?
It is very tough here to become a dancer. Fine arts are not promoted as very serious arts comparatively to math and science. This is very sad. And actually for students it is very hard. Basically only very tough ones who would like to go all the way, they survive. I think modern dance in America is excellent. I think classical ballet is much weaker, and it is very young because it was established by Mr. Balanchine. But I have to say many people are trying to establish nice schools and, you know, follow the certain syllabus, but the discipline and the certain structure is necessary for ballet.
But dancers, like all talented and dedicated artists, have to do what they're trained to do. For many, as time passes, a little age catches up with them, and performing becomes less possible, there's often the desire to pass their passion on to another generation.
every day. I can tell you honestly from my full heart, this is just a holiday, just to come to the studio and see how students with open eyes, they just want more and more. And, you know, from my last time I came, I see the progress already. I'm happy because, yes, I teach them.
To learn more about Loyola University's ballet program, go to wwno.org or nolavie, nolavie.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Lipman.
Sharon Lipman is the founder of nolavie.com and a regular contributor here to WWNO. Thank you, Sharon, for that All Things New Orleans fanfare on this Thursday evening. Jack Hopke here. Good evening to you once again. Glad to have you along with us. We're going to change subject. We'll be back to the arts in just a little bit, but let's talk Facebook. It's, as you know, it's gone public recently, and its future depends largely on one question. Do their ads, do Facebook advertisements work? Potential investors are betting that Facebook will become an advertising behemoth, but there's very little public research to back them up. So NPR's Steve Henn and Zoe Chase from the Planet Money team decided they'd run their own little test.
First, we need our guinea pig, a business in need of Facebook advertising.
I found it at Jazz Fest. Michael Friedman and Greg Augarten sell New York-style pizza at a takeout window that could only be found in New Orleans, between the streets of piety and desire.
Can you make good New York pizza outside of New York? And the dough is like the most important thing.
It's called Pizza Delicious. Two nights a week, if you're in the know, you call them up and order a pie. Business has been good, but they're about to buy their own place. So for the first time, they're thinking about paid advertising.
I also wonder if people would think us advertising would be lame. I don't know. People think we're like really cool because we're like a pop-up restaurant, but so much of what we've done is just out of necessity.
For the new spot, the restaurant, they're going to need a solid stream of customers. They've been thinking about advertising on Facebook, but didn't know how.
So we hooked them up with a social media ad guru in California.
I got the pizza guys into a studio in New Orleans.
I got Rob Leathern, CEO of Optimal, into a studio in San Francisco.
And San Francisco. Rob, can you hear everybody too?
Yep, I can hear everyone real well.
What's up, Rob?
What's up?
While these guys wanted to sell more pizza, we had an ulterior motive.
We wanted to get inside an ad campaign on Facebook and see if it really worked. Would buying an ad on Facebook actually help sell more pizzas?
First, they had to build an ad.
Facebook's story is if your friends like something, you're more likely to try it. So the guys decided to target the friends of people who liked Pizza Delicious.
74% of people in New Orleans are already friends with someone who is a fan of your page.
224,000 people.
Facebook can slice up potential customers in New Orleans 1,000 different ways.
They were looking for people jonesing for real New York pizza.
Type in like the New York Knicks or something. So you can add like the New York Jets, Carmelo Anthony, the Giants.
Making the New York connection cut the reach of the ad down to 15,000. And how could this not work?
We had nailed the demographic. They were golden.
But 12 hours later, we started getting these calls from Michael.
On his cell phone. They were kind of sad.
Yeah, it was like all zeros across the board.
Facebook doesn't make money till people click on the ad. If no one clicks, they turn the ad off.
They'd struck out. They had just 48 hours to make this work.
So they changed the target. They dropped the Knicks fans.
We just put in pizza for New Orleans.
And then, Zoe, you had this stroke of genius.
Stop. You could add, like, these other things that came up, like Italian and mozzarella and gnocchi and espresso.
Yeah, and people like ice cream, generally like pizza, that helps out. We're up to, like, 30,000.
The ads went viral, as they say, twice the usual number of click-throughs. The ad showed up more than 700,000 times. Basically, everyone in New Orleans on Facebook saw it twice. And Pizza Delicious got close to 20 times the number of Facebook fans they usually get in 2 days.
Is that feeling of exhilaration worth $240? I don't know. But hopefully it adds some more business.
The pizza guys paid close to a dollar for each new fan. And while those fans checked out their page on Facebook and clicked like, this was no guarantee they were going to show up and actually buy some pizza.
Cut to 48 hours after the ad started running. More than 200 new fans later. Here's Greg.
After a long night of asking every single customer where they found out about Pizza Delicious, none of them said that they found out about us through the Facebook ad. Zero people.
But while Greg took the garbage out, he checked his phone, and there was a message.
Just found out about you guys via a sponsored Facebook ad, if you can believe it. Super excited about your new place. Happy to toss in a few bones over the top.
And this guy kicked in $10 to support the new restaurant.
Yeah, and that was cool. I thought that was really cool of him. And we got some return on our ad that we could actually see.
Right, let's be clear. You made $10 off a $240 investment.
We did.
Maybe someday these guys' new fans will show up and buy some pizza. But social advertising's so new, nobody knows for sure. It's still unproven, untested, largely unstudied.
There's just not a huge body of research out there about the conversion from Facebook fans to buyers. Some companies like Ben & Jerry's say they've gotten a big return.
But it's anecdotal.
Advertisers on Facebook are betting they can make it work, that the customers will come.
And that's what Facebook's investors are betting on, too. I'm Steve Henn in Silicon Valley.
Zoe Chase, NPR News, New York.
Pizza Delicious is a Bywater takeout window between Piety and Desire Streets, open Thursdays and Sundays. More information online at pizzadelicious.blogspot.com. It's all things New Orleans for the first full day of summer. Hope the season goes well for you. Thanks for listening. It's also opening night for another season of a very popular local theatrical production company, Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. So to kick it off, we've once again brought in the man who's run the show and the shows for decades. It is a pleasure to welcome back once again for an annual visit to WWNO. B. Michael Howard, the artistic director of Tulane Summer Lyric Theater. It's great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Always a pleasure. How many years now for you at Summer Lyric?
45.
How do you go about keeping it fresh and new and inspiring for your own self after having done it for so long?
Well, I think it's the love for the art form itself. It stays fresh with the production you're doing, especially if you've never done it before, like Sunset Boulevard. It offers new problems. It offers design concepts that have to be conquered. For instance, you see a Broadway show like Sunset Boulevard with a multimillion-dollar set. Well, we're not going to be able to do that, even if we had the money on that stage at Tulane. So the material itself keeps you creative. And then if you repeat a show, say you do a carousel that you did 15 years ago, you have new ideas about it. And especially as you grow older, you start to look at productions in a very different way. I think we owe our creative spirit as directors to the writers and to the musicians who create it. And then we have the wonderful opportunity of recreating it.
Now, you're opening with Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
Diane Mack, of course, mm-hmm. of our station, had a couple of the cast members from Sunset come on
yes.
and speak with her. But what now let's move on to the rest of the season a little bit here. Anything Goes in Fiddler on the Roof. What are some of your considerations in choosing repertoire, Mr. Howard?
New Orleans likes the classics.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it does, because in opera we accept that, in theater we accept it, we have the Tennessee Williams Festival. They like the classics. So I chose Anything Goes, which just happened to be being revived on Broadway. And it just is a delightful comedy.
It's Cole Porter.
And hit songs.
Yeah.
I Get No Kick from Champagne. I mean, Friendship, one right after the other.
Who's the musical director for you?
Leonard Rabin, the chairman of our department, mm-hmm. our music mm-hmm. department. He's been with us for a while.
Indeed.
And he's yeah. absolutely wonderful. And, of course, I'm very lucky. I'm crazy about Diane Lala. She's done great work for us. She's from here. Most people know her. All the theater community knows her.
We know her husband here at WNO, don't we? We're talking about our friend Bob Pavlovich.
Exactly. And he'll be in Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
He'll be one of the leads in that. Yeah,
and you've got another familiar name, a local man with a lot of successful experience, Alton Gino, doing Fiddler for you.
Yes, indeed. I'm just a teensy bit older than Alton, but I've known him since college. He knows summer lyric. He's starred many times. He's directed. And that's important with he and Diane both, because the time period, 2 weeks, you know, it's not a lot of time. So we have figured out a solution to getting something really on the boards in 2 weeks, and they both know it, so that's a great help.
Any finds? Any
yes.
new people that our audiences are going to discover?
Yes. One will be in Anything Goes, I think. Peter Elliott will be doing the lead. He plays clarinet. He's a musician. He sings beautifully and dances, and he's a New Orleanian, and just extremely talented. We're also bringing back a person from New Orleans who's had extensive professional experience, Julie Tolliver, and she'll be playing the Rena Sweeney role.
Well, it's just about time to start getting ready to wrap things up and head over for opening night. But I do want to ask if there's what else you want to say to us before we send you on your way and back over to the theater.
I want to say to New Orleans how much I appreciate their support, and Tulane appreciates their support, Summer Lyric. And there's still some tickets left. I want you to come and see what we do. You'll be delighted that this is coming from New Orleans.
B. Michael Howard, the longstanding artistic director of Tulane Summer Lyric Theater, our guest here on WWNO. Thank you once again, and do I say break a leg to you as artistic director?
Break a leg.
Break a leg all season
long.
Have
you seen that commercial?
Yes.
Break a leg. I used to be excited about that phrase. Now I'm a little worried at my age.
We'll see you again soon.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true? I get a kick out of you. Some get their kicks from cocaine. I'm sure that if I took even one sniff, that would bore me terrifically too. Then I get a kick out of you.
Time for us to put a wrap, as Mr. Howard would probably say, on all things New Orleans. The first All Things New Orleans of the summer of 2012. Glad you could join us. Don't forget, you can access and share our features anytime at WWNO.org. I'm Jack Hopke. Our associate producer and editor is Thomas Walsh, and we'll both be back with you next Thursday. Thanks for listening.